When the federal government releases its annual financial statements later this week, they'll show something slightly shocking, and that's this. The running tally of improper payments since 2003 has crossed the $1 trillion mark. But one reason the number keeps going higher is better data collection by federal agencies. Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu has more.
Crossing the inauspicious $1 trillion threshold comes despite several years of concerted effort to reduce improper payments, including the government-wide Do Not Pay initiative. Precise figures for 2015 aren't expected to be released until Thursday afternoon, when the Government Accountability Office releases the audited government-wide financial statements. In 2014, agencies made a surprising $125 billion in estimated improper payments, $20 billion higher than earlier projections. Beryl Davis, GAO's Director of Financial Management and Assurance, told an Association of Government Accountants conference that agencies had again reported a high number of improper payments in 2015, enough to total more than $1 trillion since the government first began collecting statistics as part of the 1992 Improper Payments Act.
We're doing a better job of estimating improper payments than we have in the past. And, you know, more and more agencies are now doing better risk assessments, and they're coming to better conclusions about, you know, what their estimates are. So, you know, in some cases when the number goes up, it's not always a negative. I mean, the numbers were there, they just weren't necessarily, you know, identified and estimated and reported out. So I think that's one thing that's happened.
Aside from better estimating, Davis says the Office of Management and Budget has also begun to require agencies to capture more granular data on their payments, leading to more accurate conclusions about the scope of payments that are likely to have been too large or too small.
They've collected data this year about the different categories of types of improper payments, and a lot of them, and I'll just use "lot" in a very general term, you know, have to do with documentation issues. So it's possible that these are legitimate payments, but, you know, we don't have a contract, we don't have support, we, for whatever reason, I think the durable medical equipment might be one of them. There are a number of reasons why we just don't have sufficient information. So that could be, you know, a reason why, you know, some of the numbers go up. I think that, you know, basically there is more emphasis on looking at improper payments, and as a result, you know, we're doing a better job of estimating, and hopefully, assuming the cycle goes, you know, full cycle, in other words, you identify, you find out what the root causes are, you implement corrective actions, you know, hopefully we're getting going through the process of reducing improper payments.
The Department of Health and Human Services has historically been the department responsible for the largest proportion of the government's improper payments, mostly through its Medicare and Medicaid programs, and HHS's 2015 financial statements showed a significant increase from $78.4 billion in 2014 to $89.8 billion in 2015. Meanwhile, though, the Treasury Department and Social Security Administration, which are typically next in line with high levels of improper payments, showed some progress. Treasury made an estimated $15.6 billion in improper payments through the Earned Income Tax Credit in 2015, compared to $17.7 billion the year before. And SSA reduced its errors from $9.1 billion in 2014 to $7.1 billion last year. Gloria Jarman, the Deputy Inspector General for Audits at HHS, says it's important to point out that not all improper payments are due to malfeasance, criminal or otherwise.
You know, not all the improper payments are fraud. We often have to explain that, you know, to the Hill and to others. And like Barry said, some of the improper payments could be just that there's some documentation that's missing. But like in our case for Medicare and Medicaid, maybe the procedure still needed to be performed, but the documentation might not be there. And like you said, for durable medical equipment or even some of the things on the Medicare side, I guess it's primarily durable medical equipment where there's a requirement that there was some documentation that there was a face-to-face interaction between the doctor and the patient. If that documentation is not there, it's considered improper payments, but it doesn't mean that the patient didn't need the wheelchair or the hearing aid or whatever the medical equipment was. So we are working closely, and I know the department, Sheila Conley and I had a conversation about that earlier this week, our deputy CFO. There is an effort to try to better define what improper payments mean, because I think the public thinks that these are all, fraud, but they definitely aren't. And as some of the programs are growing, like Medicaid is expanding, you know, with the Affordable Care Act, Medicaid is going to be a bigger program. So even our Department of Health and Human Services, their target for the improper payments for Medicare in 2016 is higher than it was in 2015, because they know the program is growing. As they're beginning to define what improper payments are, their number is going to be higher than it's been in the past because there's more money involved. So I think, you know, over time, you know, as these improper payments are being better measured, we'll start seeing the numbers go down, but first they're going to go up before they go down is what I would predict.
And not all improper payments are necessarily overpayments, though most are. OMB's breakdowns for 2014 showed $113 billion in overpayments, but $11 billion in underpayments. Agencies also, with varying degrees of success, recapture payments once they've been made. In 2014, HHS recovered $13.4 billion, Treasury recovered $6.3 million, and SSA recovered $3.3 billion, according to data on paymentaccuracy.gov. In the case of HHS, agency officials are also trying to tackle their improper payments problem through a new data analytics office within the IG's office. Carol Brzmielkiewicz leads the office as the IG's chief data officer.
We're the nerds that think behind the scenes about data quality, MOUs, you know, memorandums of understanding and agreements and data usage and what's the quality and thinking about data elements you have, what are the core elements, is there appropriate data governance around that to make sure that when you're doing your work, you have the best information at your fingertips to make sure that when you get to your results, you trust them. And we're working through analytic tools to help visualize and understand the data. So part of what we're finding too is there's a lot of places where it has been an Excel chart. There's a lot of richness in data sets. There are a couple of cases even in our fraud world where there were a couple of physicians that really stood out as outliers potentially in the Excel spreadsheet, and nobody understood them until they were plotted on a map. And when you could very clearly see that the provider was in California trying to treat patients in North Carolina, that's what our investigators called a clue, right? So just figuring out the right visualization tool to really interact with the data, and also recognizing that we're all taking in information differently. Some of you are reading the slides in front of me, some of you are hearing my voice, and some of you aren't understanding the message until you're writing it down. So we all take in information in different ways, and so really what it's about is unlocking the data so that all of us can interpret the data the way that we need to make it meaningful for our work.
In Washington, Jared Serbu, federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.